The first case up this morning is the Mirage Casino Hotel LLC versus District Court et al. Please note that Justice Pickering is not participating in the first case. Justice Perrier is not available, but he will listen to the tapes following oral argument this morning. If you are ready to proceed, the appellants may do so. If you wish to reserve time for rebuttal, please so state.
No, I guess I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, I am Robert Molina. I'm the attorney for the petitioner in this case, the Mirage Casino Hotel LLC. This case arises out of an accident that occurred involving a Cirque du Soleil employee, plaintiff Marion Molina, during his performance at the Love Show at the Mirage. Now, plaintiff claims that his accident was due to Mirage employees improperly cleaning his wardrobe. Now, it is undisputed in this case that Love is put on through a joint effort between plaintiff's employers, Cirque du Soleil, and the Mirage. The Mirage employees that work in this case, they're full-time dedicated to their work at the Love. They don't work at the casino at other points. They work only on the Love show. It's also uncontested that Cirque controls pretty much everything that the Mirage employees do. So there is no dispute in this case that the Mirage employees that work on the Love Show are in the same trade and business as plaintiff's employer, Cirque. The only question in this case is whether the fact that the Mirage has other employees in other departments that have nothing to do with this case, whether that fact trumps the fact that all the employees that do have any relevance in this case are clearly, totally enmeshed, doing the same type of things that plaintiff's employer does. And it's to the extent that plaintiff himself didn't even realize that the Mirage employees were not.
Counsel, you're involved in a trade and business argument here, but the district court didn't address that. It seems a bit premature. The basis of the dismissal, as I understand it, was waiver.
Okay. Yes.
Shouldn't we address that and determine first whether or not waiver is applicable?
Sure.
And by the way, with respect to the trade or business argument, since the district court didn't evaluate it, even if we agreed you did not waive, isn't that something that should go back to the district court? I'm not sure that the record is sufficient for us to even make that call. So I'd like to hear from you first about waiver, and then secondly, if there is no waiver, how can we address it at this level before the district court has evaluated that question?
Sure, Your Honor. Before I get into my arguments regarding waiver, I want to note that in the initial order regarding the motion for summary judgment, the district court judge did not reference the arguments regarding same trade or business. However, upon the motion for reconsideration, the district court judge, he did include the language that addressed the issues as to same trade or business. So I do believe that that is an issue of law that's appropriate for the Supreme Court to decide because it was raised in the revised order denying the motion for summary judgment. So as far as for the waiver argument, the district court, in its orders, recognized that a defendant can raise affirmative defenses later in the litigation. However, the district court found that in this particular case, the Nevada Industrial Insurance Act was intended for parties to bring motions for summary judgment early on in the litigation. The problem with that point is there is absolutely no law, no authority that actually supports that. There's not legislative history. There's not case law. It's just unsupported. So here we have a motion for summary judgment, and it should be treated as no other different motion. Usually, motions for summary judgments are not brought until the close of discovery. So what's going to happen is the district court judge is going to say, well, let's see until what discovery goes to show. At the earliest, people tend not to bring motions for summary judgment until experts are disclosed. Here, in this particular case, The issues that have to be determined is whether the defendant is in the same trader business as the plaintiff's employer. That's something that needs discovery, because that third party, that the plaintiff's employer, is not a party in the case, and so we have to establish that information through discovery. So in this particular case, as noted by the district court judge, this is a case where the situation doesn't fall on all fours with all the prior case law presented by this court. Usually what happens is the contractor that's seeking indemnity, it's usually just a contractor that limits, it does only work in one isolated area. Here, we have a different situation. So honestly, it took a while for us to put our minds around the situation to determine, well, how does this fit into the scheme in light of the fact that no cases really have addressed this issue. So frankly, after doing work on this, we realized, oh no, we've got to just ignore the fact that we've got all these unrelated employees, and we focus on the fact that, no, the employees that are working on the show are truly in the same trader business, and everything's relevant. So at that point,
counsel, you're wanting to limit, you're looking at a resort hotel, a gaming property and hotel primarily. And you've evoked this lack of discovery for not putting forth. What argument was made in the reconsideration, since we have this one-liner or little language that goes toward that? How did you address that, or how did it get mixed based on what Justice Hardesty said about possibly remanding because it really wasn't developed?
I'm sorry, on the issue of what?
Same trade.
On the same trade? The language in the order?
What type of argument did you put forth at the district court as to this?
Oh.
We have a one-liner, basically, in the motion for reconsideration.
Your Honor, this was, the arguments were fully put forth in the original motion, at oral arguments, the reply. I mean, the arguments
Did you argue down below that there was a lack of discovery in that area?
No, as far as for the delay.
So you're making, no, not as to the base of delay for talking about waiver, but as the same trade, same business.
Right. The argument that was made is essentially everything that was done by all the work that was done by the Mirage employees, this is the same work that's done by the Cirque employees. Cirque du Soleil has about 19 different shows. On most of these shows, or a large number of these shows, they have employees doing the exact same things as the Mirage employees do in this case. And in fact, the head of wardrobe for the Love Show, before she came over to the Love Show, she used to be an employee of Cirque du Soleil doing the exact same thing. So it's clear that what we're dealing with is not an instance where they retained the Mirage because they have special skills that Cirque du Soleil does not. That is not the case at all.
Mr. Molina, I acknowledge that there is a conclusory statement in the order, but frankly, the findings are weak at best to indicate to this court the basis for the trader business determination that would be critical under MERS. What do you say about our jurisprudence that establishes a relatively clear test about trader business that would suggest that Mirage and Cirque du Soleil are not, in fact, in the same business under the MERS test?
I believe that they are in the same.
Why are they in the same business? Are you suggesting that our test should be they're in the same trade or business because it is substantially the business or primarily the business?
No, I think that in particular, If you look at the circumstances, the employees that are in question, what are those employees doing? Are those employees that have relevance who did the acts that plaintiff says were done improperly? What trade or business are those employees? Because, for example, if we were to take this primary work test, if you look at take an absurd example, if you had a case involving housekeeping services and there was an injury due to improper housekeeping services, well, the argument then, if you had the primary work test, is that, oh, well, I know you're a hotel casino, but the majority of your income is from gaming. So in that case, if you had a primary work test and you looked at employees who had nothing to do with the actual accident, you would end up with absurd results. So, Your Honor, if there aren't any further questions, I'd like to save the rest of the time for my response.
Just one question. Did you ever consider making a motion to amend your answer to assert the affirmative defense that you're alleging here today? Because if we have legal issues, does it have to be pled under NRCP 8C?
Yes, Your Honor. When that was first raised in the motion for summary judgment, in the reply, I stated two options in my reply, and it was also noted at oral argument, where I argued that, number one, the case law in Nevada indicates that you can bring affirmative defense the first time on motion, but then I also put out the full arguments, the Stevens music case and things like that, talking about how it was appropriate. And so I gave the court as two options, saying that we could either move forward on these two options, and the court just proceeded as it did. So I did make that request in my original reply and at oral argument.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Good morning, Justice Douglas, members of the court. Phil Irwin, appearing on behalf of Real Parties in Interest, Marion and Silvana Melita. For the purposes of my presentation, I will refer to the Nevada Industrial Insurance Act as the Act. I'd like to begin with the availability of extraordinary writ relief in this proceeding. This court's precedent is clear that the use of mandamus petitions to challenge the denial of dispositive motions is highly disfavored. In that regard, we cited multiple cases in our answering brief that the issue of waiver of affirmative defenses is routinely taken up on direct appeal. Similarly, we would submit that should the court reach the question of whether the Mirage is entitled to statutory immunity, that dispute is littered with contested questions of fact that render writ relief inappropriate. I'll now turn to the substantive issues presented by the Mirage's petition. As my opposing counsel stated, this case arises out of the severe injuries suffered by Mr. Melita during a performance of the show Love after wardrobe technicians employed by the Mirage, not his employer, CERC, negligently mishandled his safety equipment. The Melitas filed their complaint on September 9, 2016, and the Mirage did not immediately file a dispositive motion under either Rule 12 or Rule 56, and instead filed an answer that contained 13 affirmative defenses. Statutory immunity was not one of them. Out of an abundance of caution and to avoid this specific situation, the Melitas propounded a specific interrogatory to the Mirage at the outset of the litigation that asked it to identify, quote, any defenses upon which you intend to rely at the time of trial, which are not otherwise stated in your answer on file in this action. Despite being given a second chance to disclose the affirmative defense, the Mirage failed to do so. The Mirage then proceeded to litigate the case for more than 3 years, during which time it never notified the Melitas or their counsel that statutory immunity would be an issue. As set forth in our papers, the law is clear and the Mirage does not contest that statutory immunity under the Act is an affirmative defense that may be waived if it's not timely disclosed.
As a timeliness, since discovery had not closed, what was the prejudice at this point?
Justice Douglas, I have 2 points in response to that. The first is that had the Melitas attempted to do discovery in the few weeks that were remaining in the discovery period, I would be standing here facing an argument that we acquiesce in their untimely disclosure, which we do not. Second, the bulk of the discovery on this issue was already done, including depositions of multiple third parties, CERC employees, where the Melitas were not on notice that statutory immunity was an issue in this case. So the record was developed before the Melitas ever had a chance to do it. So the suggestion that the Melitas should have gone back to try and reopen depositions to take discovery on this issue in the, 4 weeks that were remaining is simply not feasible.
Has statutory immunity been raised in any other injuries of any circus employees? Do we know from discovery?
We don't know that from discovery. In the underlying briefing on the dispositive motion, we were able to find a similar situation involving a Cirque du Soleil show at the Bellagio, where the situation was reversed, I believe, and it was a Bellagio employee that was injured. And there, the affirmative defense was untimely disclosed, and I believe it was Judge Leavitt that found that it was waived and subject to waiver, if not timely.
Was discovery closed in the second case, or was it still?
It was closed. I believe it was at trial, or right before.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Herman, that's kind of a rub here in this one. It wasn't closed, even though it was late in the process,
correct,
as you pointed out. And, you know, we have case law on this. It goes either way. We allow motions to amend even after the trial is over in certain circumstances. But if discovery is still open, is that an abuse of discretion of the court to rule this way? I think that's the key issue here. If you tell me why you don't think it's an abuse of discretion.
I don't believe it's an abuse of discretion because under the court's decision in Ivory Ranch, this exact situation was addressed where discovery was done and the party that was not notified of the affirmative defense never had any chance to address the issue. And I think the prejudice is borne out by the Mirage's positions that it's taking in its petition, its reply, and even here today, talking about the undisputed nature of the record and what CERC does at other CERC shows. We were never able to do discovery on that issue. So I think that is the prejudice, and that the Mirage is able to come in and rely on a one-sided record that was developed before the Melitas were ever on notice that statutory immunity would be an issue.
I see. Okay, can I ask you one other question? Jumping subjects on MERS, the MERS test. Here, it sounds like I'm reading this, you know, it's the judge kind of threw this in at the end, you know, this amended order. I think it was called a revised order where he puts this language in. But are there some genuine issues of material fact on this MERS test in your view, or is this an issue of law at this stage?
To the extent the MERS test is still at issue in this proceeding, and for reasons I can address later, we would submit it is no longer at issue.
Okay.
I would submit that, yes, there are disputed issues of fact, given how fact-specific the MERS normal work test is. And that was not fully developed in the underlying record, either on the dispositive motion or the motion for reconsideration, although I agree that the order that was ultimately entered is not as clear as it could be.
Would you articulate those questions of fact that you perceive to exist?
Well, I think one question of fact would be and it was addressed here earlier and I just mentioned it, is that what does CERC do on its other shows as compared to the Love Show? To the extent you're arguing that the CERC employees normally perform this work in other places, we haven't been able to do discovery on that. And now the discovery period is obviously closed.
What would be the difference between a remand or a denial of the writ, as far as your side's concerned?
A denial of the writ would affirm the court's holding that they had waived the affirmative defense, that the Mirage had waived, which would mean the statutory immunity issue is no longer a dispute in this case, and that would go away. To the extent the court finds that remand is necessary based on the normal work test, I would think that would go past the waiver issue and require additional proceedings down below to address normal work on a clear evidentiary record. However, I would like to point out that the Mirage has not cleared the first hurdle to reach the normal work test, in our view. In the court below, we argued that the Mirage was not a subcontractor or independent contractor as a cursory claimed in that proceeding. The district court addressed that argument and indicated orally during the hearing that it intended to rule in the Melita's favor on that point. Yet the written order, which was crafted by the Mirage, did not address that argument. We would submit that the Supreme Court, based on longstanding Nevada precedent, can consider the Melita's argument on that point and affirm the district court's ruling based on other grounds. In that regard, Nevada law is clear that employers and co-employees of an injured person are immune from liability, and that subcontractors and independent contractors may be afforded that same status. In the court below, the Mirage claimed that it was a subcontractor or independent contractor. We disputed that contention. and it was left out of the order. That said, in its petition, the Mirage again represented without any supporting analysis that it is a subcontractor or independent contractor entitled to protection. In the face of our renewed arguments, the Mirage has completely changed its position in the reply brief to now claim that it is a direct employee of CERC. Put another way, the Mirage, a privileged gaming licensee and a hotel casino that is part of the largest gaming company in this state, is arguing it is employed by a circus that co-produces a show on its property. We would submit that proposition is absurd on its face. So because we did not have the opportunity to address the argument in briefing that the Mirage is now asserting that it is a direct employee of CERC, we would like to do so now. The Mirage first asserts that the control test under Tucker is determinative of an employer-employee relationship and supports its position here. We disagree. As stated in the court's decision in Richards v. Republic Silver State Disposal, the Tucker control test is just one factor to be considered when applying the Mears normal work test. And because the Mears normal work test only applies to determine whether subcontractors and independent contractors are entitled to immunity, we would submit that the Tucker decision is not controlling, as the Mirage has now conceded it is not a subcontractor or independent contractor entitled to protection as a co-employee. Similarly, the Mirage relies on the Terry decision in this court's analysis of employee and employer under Nevada's Minimum Wage Act and the court's subsequent adoption of the economic realities test. But again, the economic realities test has no application here, as this court expressly stated that NRS Chapter 608, the Minimum Wage Act, and the Workers' Compensation Act are not, quote, in pari materia. They're not of the same subject matter. Similarly, the court cited numerous cases standing for the general proposition that the employment analysis under the Minimum Wage Act and the Workers' Compensation Act are treated differently. So we are left with the statutory definitions of employee and employer under the Act, which hinge on the terms contract for hire and in service. We submit that applying the general definitions of those terms that the court set forth in Terry would lead to an illogical and absurd result in this case. The Mirage and CERC, in point of fact, would both be considered employees and employers at the same time. The Mirage and CERC are both parties to the production agreement, the contract for hire, according to Mirage, under which both entities provide and receive services that are of use to the other. Applying those definitions, the Mirage and CERC would either be an employee or an employer both at the same time. We would submit that interpreting the statute under the facts of this case in that manner would lead to an absurd result. Simple fact is that the Mirage is not a direct employee. The Mirage provided compensation for its employees, including the wardrobe technicians, and dictated the terms and conditions of their employment. While CERC was entitled to exercise artistic control over the show, it did not have the power to hire and fire MGM Mirage employees. In that regard, Section 10.1...
Does CERC have the power to fire?
CERC had the power to replace wardrobe technicians. It did not have the power to hire and fire. Section 10.1 of the production agreement expressly required that any changes be done in compliance with MGM employment policies, not CERC's. And most importantly, in our view, on this issue, the Mirage and CERC each contracted to provide separate workers' compensation insurance for their respective employees. And why would they do that except to maintain independence and create separation between the two entities? These highly sophisticated companies easily could have created a variety of contractual arrangements that invoke the protections of the Act. But they instead chose to maintain independent enterprises with separate employees, providing distinct types of services under the umbrella of each company's respective workers' compensation insurance. That was no mistake, and we would submit that the Mirage cannot now co-opt CERC statutory immunity simply because the money taken in by the show flows through the box office. In sum, our view is that the Mirage is not a subcontractor of CERC, it is not an independent contractor of CERC, and it certainly is not a direct employee of CERC. The relationship created by the production agreement does not fit within the provisions of the Act, and the Mirage is not statutorily immune from the Melita's claims. Lastly, I would like to address the Mears normal work test. Again, the Mears normal work test applies to determine when a subcontractor or independent contractor is entitled to statutory immunity as a co-employee. Given that the Mirage has now conceded that it is not a subcontractor or independent contractor, we believe that the Mears normal work test is no longer at issue. That said, the district court correctly concluded that the Mirage, a gaming licensee and hotel casino, is not in the same trade as Cirque, which is a circus. The Mirage seeks to focus the analysis on the specific type of service, but in our view, Nevada jurisprudence, including the GES and Barrick decisions, focus on the trade or type of business engaged in by the respective parties. In Barrick, Barrick and Mountain States were, quote, clearly not engaged in the same type of business, end quote, where Barrick was in the business of mining and processing gold, and Mountain States was in the business of welding and pipe fitting. And I would note that in that case, the court addressed a similar argument that has been advanced by the Mirage, which is we employ a variety of different people. And in Barrick, the court said that if that view was accepted, any time Barrick brought in an independent contractor or outside worker to perform any type of services, then it would be same trade or work. And that, in our view, would swallow the rule. The same analysis should apply here. The Mirage is in the business of operating a hotel and casino. Cirque is in the business of operating a circus. And under Barrick, the fact that the Mirage's wardrobe technicians are indispensable to the show's production or further the show's production and Cirque's business is not determinative that they are in the same trade or business. For that reason and the others I've addressed here today, we respectfully request that the court deny the Mirage's petition. I thank the court for its consideration of this matter, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Anything additional? Thank you, Congressman. Mr. Molina?
Mr. Molina, I have one question. Thinking this is asked to the writ relief applicability. Let's say we did nothing and we didn't entertain the writ, but not make any ruling on all these issues here. Where would it leave the case procedurally right now if it went back to district court and we just chose not to intervene in the action?
Well, I suppose the case would go to trial. We would do a motion to amend to try to bring the affirmative defense, because I don't think that actually was denied. But at that point, then, we would have to raise the issue on appeal.
How do these findings in this revised order impact the case? Because it sounds like the court may have already decided the issue of on the mirrors of the argument. So what's your position on that?
Right. And, Your Honor, that is the conundrum, is the fact that the court seems to already decided, and that's why we think that it's ripe at this point for decision by the court. The district court has made its ruling. It has decided that based on the case law exists, that there's nothing that addresses the situation. So trying to fit everything in this case to the prior case law, it's denied just because of the generalities. But I think that overall, I think that the Mears normal work test does apply. I wanted to add, as far as on the prejudice comments that were added, after the Mirage filed its original motion for summary judgment, several depositions were taken afterwards, six depositions. The most notable is the person most knowledgeable from Cirque. Now, they chose not to ask any questions on this issue. They didn't set that in the list of topics, but that's one of the depositions they took. They didn't make any effort to take another deposition. So any prejudice that they claim that they had is waived.
There was no counter motion for summary judgment on the part of the respondents in this case?
Correct.
Okay. So the court's findings on certain issues, they may have ultra vires to the real issues in this case. Is that your argument then?
Yeah. I believe that as far as for the court was just trying to make an findings based on what he thought the limitations were, knowing that this, I think the court recognized, Judge Corey recognized, that the facts of this case don't really seem to fit all the prior case law. And so I think that what we need to do is we need to look at the fact that in this particular case, you have what are the relevant employees? What are the employees? Are those employees that are relevant to this case, are they in the same trade or business?
So, Mr. Molina, in response to Mr. Irwin's comment, before you even get to the MERS test, is Mirage claiming that it is an employee of Cirque, or are you an independent contractor, or are you a subcontractor, or are you a co-employee? What position have you settled on today?
Your Honor, as far as for, if you look at the briefs, these are arguments that were made from the very beginning at the, in our reply to the motion for summary judgment. Our argument is really that it doesn't matter in the sense that if you look at what the Nevada Industrial Insurance Act was intended to do, it intended to get people who were doing the same thing to extend immunity as long as what that entity was doing was pretty much the same as what the plaintiff's employer was doing. And so this is not a case where it is simply just someone who's coming in occasionally and doing something specialized which the plaintiff's employer couldn't do. That's really what they tried to leave out. So, Your Honor, if you wish any further questions, I'd be glad to respond. Otherwise, my time is up.
Any additional? Hearing no additional requests for additional questions.